Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome on this Monday. There's a lot to talk about together, and I'm looking forward to doing that. Let me tell you what our number is here, 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. I almost don't know where to begin, though I do know where to begin. Over the weekend, it was a very troubling weekend for many of us when we got the news that Kenny Harris was gunned down at Northwood Shopping Center outside the New Haven Lounge. I was just, Saturday morning when I heard about it, I was just devastated. I got an email that told me about it. You can check out what I wrote about it on our blog. Just Google Mark Steiner Show .com and it'll take you right there. And it was a shock because, well, I know Keith Covington, who owns the Haven Lounge, is just a beautiful, gentle human being, as is Ken Harris, as was Ken Harris. And all weekend long, I was dealing with it and talking to people, and it was just a shock. And what I kept thinking about, besides how beautiful a man Ken Harris was and how dedicated he was to children and to young people and how he came out of the streets himself from Park Heights Avenue, single mother, decided education was his way out, and fought his way through that way and became a standout baseball player at Dunbar, then went to Morgan State University. Worked his way through, became a city councilman, became a father, and a really good father, who was dedicated to his children and dedicated to the children of the city. And the other news of the weekend was the United States government, Treasury Secretary Paulson and President Bush, are going to bail out Wall Street to the tune of $700 billion, maybe not just $700 billion, maybe $1 trillion. $1 trillion. Yet they can't find money to rebuild the cities of America. They can't find money to put into the children of America. They can't find money to take care of the health care of America. They can't find money to put into Baltimore City so our deteriorating houses can be rebuilt by community people with decent jobs to rebuild those houses and rebuild a green economy. Stable family, stable jobs, income, health care breed stable families, which means less violence, less drugs, less crime on the streets. But we can't afford to do that. But we can't afford to bail out Wall Street and bail out Wall Street. And it needs to be bailed out. There's no question. I think everybody agrees. But bailed out without government oversight, the Bush administration is doing to us now what they did in the build-up to the Iraq War. Don't ask questions. Just pass the bill. We know we have to do this. We have to invade Iraq. Don't ask questions. Just let us do what we have to do to bail out the industry. We'll run it. Don't worry. It's okay. We'll take care of it. We know what to do. So let's hope America doesn't buy it this time. Let's hope Democrats don't buy it this time. But we're going to talk today and reflect on Ken Harris and reflect on what happened to him, about what he means for the city, what his death represents to this city. Of course, our condolences go out to his family, his wife, his son, his daughter. There'll be a rally at 6 o'clock in front of Northwood Shopping Center. I will be there. Many people from Morgan and WEAA will be there to remember Ken Harris and to say enough is enough. That's the name of the rally. Enough is enough. It's hard for me to talk about it without getting emotional because it to seeing a man who is such a dedicated father being gunned down like that is just utter madness, especially because he was gunned down by young men who he worked hard to change and bring into this nation and become citizens of this nation, and it was taken away in a very senseless way. All murder is senseless. And we will be there for that rally, and we want you to join us there. A young woman here who works here said WEAA wants to have their own rally. People at Morgan want to have their own rally because students at Morgan State University can't even walk to Northwood Shopping Center to put their money in a bank machine to get money out to go back to campus for fear of being mugged or shot or robbed. Well, this is something that needs to stop, and we as a community have to figure out what we want to do about all that. Joining me in studio is one of my favorite new commentators in the Mark Steiner Show, Dr. Eric Durham, who's professor of communications at Loyola College. It's always a pleasure to have you in the room with us, Eric.
Good to be here, Mark. Good to be here.
We want you to join us at 410-319-8888. We're going to place quick calls out right now before we turn to Lisa Leventhal, who is co-chair of the Northwood Plaza Working Group, who has been one of those voices fighting to clean up Northwood Shopping Center. My friend Keith Covington, who owns the Haven Lounge, had been battling the city for years, saying, do something to clean up Northwood Shopping Center. He's been ignored. Ken Harris has been saying the same thing. He's dead, murdered, taken away from us, taken away from his family. Maybe that death, maybe his death, unfortunately, will force them to do something at Northwood. You know, Northwood was a place back in 71 where I was a gang worker. I was assigned to that shopping center in Northeast Baltimore. It was tough then. Nothing like it is today. 410-319-8888. And if we can make a call out now to both Bill Henry and Kiefer Mitchell, which is where I think we have to go before they start their city council meeting. And then we'll turn to our other guests to talk as well about their thoughts. 410-319-8888. And I think we have Kiefer Mitchell on the phone, who's a former city council member who ran for president of city council at the same time that his friend Ken Harris did. And Karen Harris was his friend in the council. Kiefer, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Hey, Mark. How are you?
I'm well. I've been better.
Yeah, I have too. It's been a tough weekend and a tougher week coming ahead.
Kiefer, before you have to go into the council chambers, I know you're there for the city council meeting, not as a member of the council anymore, but to kind of reflect on what happened with Ken Harris, with your former colleagues on the council.
Well, you know, I've had to go to City Hall now for a tribute to Ken Harris. And one of the things about the council, we debate and we argue and we fight all the time, but we come together and it's like a family. And even though you're not in the council, you still keep in contact with your colleagues or former colleagues. And Ken was one of those people that I kept in contact with on a regular basis after we left the council together. So this ought to be a very good trip to him and from his former colleagues.
Well, and before you have to run to the council, and before we turn to hear some words from Eric and open up the phones here, I have to ask you, Kiefer, beyond the platitudes you always say about times like this, what do we do as a city so it doesn't end? And what do you think as a banker about the bailout of Wall Street and not the bailout of our communities?
Right, and that's something that has been debated and argued all the time. I remember when our colleague B. Gaddy passed away, and it was right at the start of the Iraq War. And the issue that was, you know, we're funding all these billions of dollars for a war in Iraq, yet we have homelessness. That was B. Gaddy's big mission in life to try to wipe out. And now we have a death of a council colleague, but the hundreds of murders that take place here in our city, particularly among our young people and the gang violence, in terms of what monies are coming into the city and into not just Baltimore City, but all of our cities to make them livable cities. And to make them safe and have decent educations. That's the main part of this debate as we talk about what has transpired.
Well, Kiefer, I know if you want to have a quick reflection on Ken Harris and his life, I'd love to hear it, and then I know I'll let you go to get into those chambers.
Sure. I mean, Ken, you know, was a true public servant, and there are a lot of stories I could tell about Ken and his hard work, not just for Northeast Baltimore in terms of he served, but also for the city of Baltimore. But he was proactive, and he wasn't afraid to speak his mind. And it's those types of elected officials that we need more of. There are times where he was on the wrong side of the political spectrum, so to speak, but he was very comfortable in terms of the issues that he did stand for. And one of the things is he didn't look at issues as Democrat or Republican. He looked at what was right for his constituents. And even out of the city council, he continued to be involved in his community. And one thing that really stands out about Ken that I really admired was the fact that here's a young man who came from a single-parent household, didn't know his father. And I can remember Ken sitting in committee meetings having to leave some of these meetings early because he wanted to go see his son Kenny play football, or he had to go tend to something with his daughter Nicole. There was a big vote happening in the city council, and Kenny was out of town, or he was on his way out of town, and we needed him for a vote. And he said, well, that's going to have to wait because I'm driving my daughter to college and helping her move in. he was a family man.
He was.
And that's the part a lot of people don't see about our public servants, that they're out there in front, but there's a family that also needs their father. And Kenny was one of those types of public servants that put family first above everything else.
Kiefer Mitchell, thanks so much.
Thank you, Mark.
We'll talk to you very soon.
Take care.
Thank you for being with us. 410-319-8888. As we reflect on Ken Harris, we also reflect on the social situation in America. What we need to be demanding of the government now, I think, is not just bailing out Wall Street, which we have to do, but let's bail out our communities. Let's bail out this country. Let's put people to work. Let's fix up Baltimore City. Let's take over these 40,000 empty houses and put people in them and put people to work to fix them up for a new green economy. Let's do something about putting health care in this country instead of the madness we see. And let's go to a woman right now, and then we will turn to my friend Eric. Sorry, Eric.
But no problem. it's
go to Lisa Leventhal, who has been one of the people who, the co-chair of the Northwood Plaza Working Group, that's been fighting for these changes, along with my friend Keith Covington, who owns The Haven, to clean it up, and people have been not listening. Maybe it took this to make them listen. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Could you tell us a bit about the struggles and work that you and the people around you have been fighting for to clean up Northwood Shopping Center, that whole area?
Well, Delegate McIntosh convened the Northwood Plaza Working Group in December of 2006 to facilitate and support the revitalization of that plaza area with the assistance and involvement from the state, from many city organizations, and from community members. The Northwood Plaza Working Group is not the first community group to try to tackle this area, but it is the most recent. And I think that what we found is that it is the apathy of the property owners, not the location of the Northwood Plaza, that makes it a magnet for criminals. And in my opinion, after working on this for a couple of years, one of the major steps towards improving this whole city would be for Baltimore to create legal avenues to force negligent property owners and unresponsive property owners, like the owners of the Northwood Plaza, like Morgan State University, who also owns property over there, to make their properties safe and clean them up or sell them to major commercial developers who will.
Now, what are you saying that the people who own the property and own Northwood Shopping Center are not doing, and what is this, how has the city responded to you?
So what they're not doing is they're not providing adequate security. The one property owner of the strip that the Haven is in has provided some security, but doesn't provide it for enough hours to make an adequate difference. There were minimal efforts made on the part of the owners to make minor repairs, clean up some litter, but true transformative, substantive change has not been brought about there, obviously.
Obviously. And what has been the city government's response to all this as you've been talking to them?
Well, the city government was very involved in the working group. There were many representatives from planning, housing, BDC, city council. Mary Pat Clark was tireless in her efforts to make noise and keep us meeting and keep us brainstorming. But the primary barrier seems to be that there is currently no legal avenue to force substantive change on properties like this. And I know that Deputy Mayor Andy Frank is working on a program to address these types of properties throughout the city, but I don't know the details, and residents have not been made aware of any sort of timeline.
Well, we will keep on this, obviously, will you be there Wednesday night?
I will.
Okay, well, I will be happy to meet you there Wednesday night.
Thank you, Mark. I look forward to meeting you as well.
Thank you, Lisa. Let's, before we go I understand Mark Carter is holding on, who is from Kids on the Hill that works with young people in the city, want to hear his perspective. But I want to play a little clip of Ken Harris, just to hear his voice again, and here in WEAA.
And most people, when they look at Ken Harris, when you talk about Ken Harris and my tenure in the council, they see Ken Harris as a person of an independent voice, the watchdog, the person that is making sure that the taxpayers and the voters and the citizens of Baltimore concerns and issues are being addressed.
Just wanted to share, have his voice back on the air again. That was when he was running for president of the city council. And I really want you all to join us out there, 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on Ken Harris and the state of the city, on what I raised a moment ago about our ability, the federal government's ability to find somewhere $700 billion to bail out Wall Street with no regulatory commitment, with no safeguards for the community, with no talking about bailing out people whose mortgages are failing and losing their homes, and we can't find money to invest in our cities, money to invest in our children. And your thoughts on that, 410-319-8888. I want to bring Mark Carter on the line. I want to hear Eric Durham's thoughts when he hears Mark Carter. Mark, welcome.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks for holding.
I think you, earlier today, we saw one another, and the thought that resonated with me and has resonated with me all day is the way in which we connect the dots. And I think that it's a tragic moment for Baltimore with regards to Ken Harris. And at the same time, that tragedy is repeated over and over and over again. And not just with devastating murders that strike deep in the hearts of family and friends of people who are loved and who are no longer with us, but clearly there is incredible violence throughout the city that we see on a daily basis. And I think, you know, when we were together this morning, I thought to myself, what would it look like if someone had the courage to say, let's have an amazing experiment in the city of Baltimore, or you could pick virtually any city in the United States and say, how much would it cost to have a great infrastructure for young people, whether it's an out-of-school time network or an after-school network? What would it look like to have the best proactive public safety kind of initiative in which police and citizens got together and thought about reducing crime in a way that made sense to all constituents? What would make sense around public education and public health and virtually every facet of the city? And to me, that would be a great moment. Now, why people don't think on those levels, and what would it take for someone or some group of people with not just the intellectual capital, but the financial capital and muscle to come together to say, we want it. We want it right here. We want it right now. I've always had a fantasy, and it's not just a fantasy for Baltimore. I've lived in other cities in which, you know, every major foundation that clearly has the chops and the resources to command that kind of attention would say, not just to the leadership of the city, because they are part of that leadership, but they could say to congressmen and senators and others, this is what we want for our city. This is what we're prepared to lay down for our city. Are you with us? And play a little bit of game of chicken. And I'm not suggesting that that's what it comes down to, but considering all the people who are unknown, all the families where children have been murdered or seriously injured or otherwise, you know, that story gets told and retold countless times. Now, you know, unfortunately, it takes someone of Ken Harris's stature to sort of galvanize people's attention, but I also think we have short attention spans. But I think, you know, you said it earlier today, and I think what's really quite astounding to me is that since last week, I commute to Washington 2 days a week, everyone is talking about the economy. Everyone is talking about, well, at least we didn't know on Friday what this bailout would look
right.
like. But $700 billion, close to $1 trillion, to rescue Wall Street is stunning. It's stunning. Now, you know, part of what I and my colleagues and peers and friends and acquaintances want to know, okay, so if you bail out if you're bailing out X number of companies on Wall Street, are we still paying tens of millions of dollars of salary to the captains of industry? Do they have to give back something that they got over the last, you know, 3, 5, 10 years from the largesse of these companies and, you know, just companies run amok that have now been run into the ground that we're now bailing out? I mean, I think those are the fundamental questions. And, you know, we haven't talked about it yet, but on this Friday, we have a presidential debate coming up, or a debate between the men who would be president.
McCain and Obama.
Yeah. And that could be a stunning moment, you know, to have one of them say, you know, sort of lay it on the line. I know they both want to be president, but really sort of lay it on the line and say, you know, a $700 billion bailout, everybody's going to feel the pain. And if we're willing to do this for Wall Street, we should be willing to do this for every other area of our lives that's important. Now, I don't know what it takes for politicians to do that, but, you know, I think it's an extraordinary moment, and hopefully people will be galvanized by it.
Mark, thanks for taking your time with us.
Sure.
Good to talk to you. And, Eric, you know, we were just saying a moment ago, and then we're going to turn to Monica, Maria, and Craig. Hold on. We said we're going to come to your calls because you're from Northeast Baltimore. We want to hear your thoughts about what's going on around here. But you were saying before we went on the air that that 30% of your income is taken away in taxes.
30% of my income is taken away in taxes. Bill O'Reilly, a couple weeks prior, was sitting with Barack Obama and was acting like 25 and 30% were excruciating for him as far as capital gains go. I think it's around 15% now. But as a member of the proletariat, or at least the working workforce, that's how much. They take a third of the pie. And just to bring this all around full circle, I did not know Ken Harris. But being here 2 years, I see him infrequently throughout the city. And seeing some of the media clips post the terrible incident on Friday or Saturday, he was a person. There's sad poetry here. Murder, that there is permanent, you know. And what we have to understand is, this is a man who gave a lot of energy, time, possibly funds to enriching the lives of African-American males and African-Americans in Baltimore City. And to see his life end in the way it did, you know, it's hard, you know, it's tough. But France Fanon would say that's just horizontal violence being illustrated. And, of course, you know, black-on-black crime and things of this particular nature work all the time, as other callers have said. But, and I'm not one that's going to advocate a vertical violence, but when we talk about the amount of money and the gross amounts of money being placed into Wall Street, and they do need to be bailed out because our economy needs it. But can you imagine what, if we took one of those billions and put them in Baltimore City, what they could do?
Let's go hear what the people of Baltimore have to say about that. And a couple of people have hung up. I'm sorry. Let me just get right to you. 410-319-8888. You live in Northeast Baltimore. We want to hear what you have to say. You live all over Baltimore. You live all over the state, maybe in Virginia, Pennsylvania, Delaware, wherever you're listening to us. 410-319-8888. And if they can... if they can put on our taxes 30% for our salaries, which maybe they have to, they can certainly tax at 30%, 35% capital gains and make the folks who made the money on Wall Street pay for the mess they put us in. Mm-hmm. Monica, you're on the air.
Good evening. How are you today?
Well, Monica.
Good. First, I definitely want to say just how sad I am by the death of Mr. Harris. Someone who I would often see at the Y, different events, Guilford Elementary School, Giants in York Room, and often having just words of conversation and enlightenment about programs geared towards helping our young African-American youth and just young men in general. But one of the concerns that I often have typically with our economy, and when we look at the dollars and cents of where money is being placed, I do work for, let's just say, the city and the government. Mm-hmm. Look at how dollars and cents are being spent on a place called the Department of Juvenile Justice Service, 300 East Gay Street, a place that I don't deny sickens me to death. When I typically go through the Northwood Plaza, I cannot tell you on countless times how, in particular, a lot of our elders are frightened of our young people. You know, that the saying that it takes a village to raise a child. Well, right now we're living in a day and time where the village is afraid of the children. You know, they are afraid. Another mall in particular is the Alameda Shopping Center. You know, on any given day, you can be robbed. You can be shot. You can be stabbed at the Alameda Shopping Center. You know, I would like, if you're going to raise, you know, taxes and you're going to, you know, penalize me for the big boys, so to speak, put some money into the community where I have to reside. No more than, 3 weeks ago, my son was literally almost beaten to death at school.
Someone's beaten at school?
beaten, literally beaten at a high school here in Baltimore, Northeast Baltimore. I mean, it's countless, it's senseless, but I would really like to see some money basically placed in an infrastructure way that can really assist. You know, we tried the community outreach. We tried to do things to try to integrate young people from a holistic perspective back into the community. You know, something else literally has to be put in place. In particular, when we look at a lot of the shopping centers, because I don't know if anybody else recognized on any given day, you try going to the gas station, you try going to a lot of your little mini marts now, where a lot of our young people hang out at. You know, you have people who are literally afraid to pump gas. And I also often would talk at times with Mr. Harris, and we would always say, well, leaving the city, you know, it doesn't help. Because reality, if I decide to move to Pennsylvania today or tomorrow, I still have family who still have to still deal with whatever's still going on.
Monica, I appreciate the call. I hope your son will be okay, and I'm glad you became part of this conversation. I hope you'll join us. By the way, somebody reminded me this, and I didn't mean to say it, it's not being organized by Ken Harris's family. It's the Morgan students and others who are organizing the rally Enough is Enough at Northwood Shopping Center before the wake for Ken Harris Wednesday night at 6, so I hope you'll join us there. And everybody else as well. 410-319-8888. Maria, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Okay, well, this is Maria Allwine, and I just wanted to let your listeners know that I didn't know Ken Harris very well at all, but I did get to know him a little bit when we ran for city council president last year, and I am so sad that he has been murdered. I really am. He was very kind to me during debates and forums. Unlike the other candidates who were running, he always made sure to come over to me and greet me and shake my hand. And when we were, especially the League of Women Voters Forum that you moderated, Mark, he, when I'd say something that he liked, we sat next to each other, he'd lean over and he'd say to me, you know, way to go. You're right. That's great, you know. And I tell you, it meant so much to me. I've never forgotten his kindness. And, in fact, I've told people, you know, since that period of time last year, that how nice he was to me. And I was just stunned to read about his murder. And, you know, talking about the economy, I mean, you're so right when I think it was one of the callers said, you know, we don't connect the dots. But, you know, you look at Northwood Shopping Center, which used to be a very vibrant place to shop when I was growing up in the 60s. And you look at the amount of money that the city council, the governor, you know, whichever politician you're talking about here in this state, they've got it to redo Pratt Street. They've got it to redevelop Harbor East. You know, they have it for this development that really puts just a Band-Aid on a festering sore that really is the city of Baltimore, and it is. You know, they find that money to make it look pretty. But they don't have the money when it comes to doing the really hard work of investing in all of our neighborhoods. And, you know, you take that up to the federal level that you're talking about, and you've got a serious co-opting of our democratic processes and our government by business. And, you know, I know people don't like to hear this word, but I was so happy to hear Robert Scheer use it this morning on Democracy Now! And he said that is what fascism is. When you have big businesses, and that's what we have now, co-opting our democratic process, co-opting the political process for their own gain, that is what you have. And that is what we have in this country. And that is exemplified by what we've seen this past week. Well, it's really been longer than that, but the crisis, if you will, has been this past week. And I tell you, the only thing that's going to change that is for people, ordinary people like us, to get active and to say we're not having any more of this, to pressure people in Congress, to pressure people in the General Assembly. You know, the news about Constellation got kind of lost in all of this, too. What? And I won't go on about that, but you know how I feel about what's going on with Constellation. And, you know, just last week O'Malley said to me on your show that it was, we needed $23 million just to buy the plants back, you know, to take it public or re-regulate it. And the whole of Constellation's going for $4 billion. I mean, what's wrong with this picture, okay?
Maria, we have to take a break. But I'm glad you're part of the show. Always good to hear from you.
Yeah, Yeah, thanks, Mark. Take care.
We'll take come right back. Herb is the next caller up. We're going to bring in, so stay on the line, Herb, but we'll come right back with our friend Eric Durham here in the studio. Anthony McCarthy is on the line to join us for the rest of the program as well, to join us to talk about Ken Harris and the state of this economy. So stay with us. We'll be right back at 410-319-8888. Welcome back. Mark Steiner here at 410-319-8888. Dr. Eric Durham in the house, president, professor of communications at Loyola College.
President in the future.
President in the future. Never know. You never know.
That's right.
And we will be going to Herb and Norman, our next two callers up. Anthony McCarthy is on the line with us, who was a host here on Fridays and one of the best people in radio and just a all-around good human being. Anthony, welcome. Good to have you with us, too.
Be with you, Mark.
Anthony, I want to open the phones here and bring Herb in, and then I'd like to hear some of your reflections on this. I mean, you're a community activist, you're a political commentator, you've been involved in the community for a long time, you're a minister. You have a lot to say about this, but let me go to first, who's been holding on for a while, Herb in Northeast Baltimore, before we hit to our next caller. Herb, you're on the air.
Hi, good evening, gentlemen. I'd like to say good evening to you all.
Good evening.
First of all, thank you. First of all, my last name is Harris, and I take it personal because I've never met a Harris that has not strived or thrived to help, you know, others, you know, as far as I've known or I've lived. And I just want to make a comment, and I'll finish.
That's right.
I think the problem that is going on, I'm a 38-year-old male. I'm an independent contractor / baker by trade, and I grew up in Baltimore, West Baltimore, then Charles Village, now I live in Northeast Baltimore. The problem that's going on in our community is the top is taken from the legs. If you have a table structure, you cannot support the top of the table, cannot be supported if it's going to take from the legs. That means the people that are at the poverty level, the lower class people, the upper class is growing and, you know, the rich are growing and then the society below is not growing. There's all kinds of funds being cut. There's not enough money being going into our cities. I mean, when I was coming up, you had fresh air camps. You had programs, mentoring programs for the kids. Now, what the result is going, the cause and the effect is the people have taken the money from the inner cities, and now they've created a monster. The kids are running rampant. There's nobody to mentor these kids. There's no morals. There's no values. There's no after-school programs. They close all the Enid Pratt libraries, things to soften up kids' hearts. You know, you got gangs in Baltimore. This is horrific. You know, and just like the lady before me said, I was going to move to Pennsylvania, but why? Because this is my city. I grew up here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just think that we really need to do something because it's not going to stop. This is one. I mean, the loss of Ken Harris was just—it was awful. It was horrific. You know, I'm deeply hurt, but I know that it's going to continue. I see the monster out there. I see some of the kids. I try to talk to them, mentor them at my church. We have an outreach program. But they're lost. I mean, it's like fighting a giant,
and they are lost. And I said in what I wrote over the weekend was, it was in the, you know, on our blog today and in the Examiner was that, I mean, there are examples of people like, a man who was on the show last week, Dante Wilson. Dante Wilson is turning ex-felons and gang members into mentors for children. And having them work with our schools and teachers and kids. And he's very successful at it. If we can have a $700 billion bailout of Wall Street, we can put hundreds of millions of dollars each into cities like Baltimore to turn this city around, to give people work, to take ex-felons and put them on a path where they'll be our productive citizens and not taking from this community. I mean, there's got to be an investment to make it work.
Baltimore is not a priority for those people with money, and the inner cities of America aren't a priority. It's how I read it, because you can send Condoleezza Rice to Libya, who and Gaddafi was our largest enemy in the 80s. I mean, he was close to Satan, and now he put $1 billion in his hand. You can fund the war in Iraq. You got $79.4 billion sitting in a Wall Street bank from the Iraq reserves. You got a lot of money. You know, $1 billion—that's $1,000 million. That could have done something for Northwood, for West Baltimore, for anywhere. But the powers that be, hegemony, do not want those funds funneled into certain places because these places are not a priority. The caller before said something about fascism. I heard something about socialism now because the government's doing all this bailout. These are people who didn't want government. They was laissez-faire from Jump Street, and now it's okay for the government to jump in. You got to talk about a lot of issues, and I hope some of this will say, hey, we can talk about issues that are pretty pertinent that we need to get past in order for this to get better, because chances are it'll probably get worse as far as the economy goes before it gets better.
Anthony, and Herb, thank you so much for calling. Norman, we're going to bring you right in on the heels of Anthony McCarthy's comments and hear what you have to say. Anthony?
Well, two things. I think Dr. Durham hit it on the head, but I think it goes even deeper than we don't like to hold people accountable, and we don't like to talk about leadership. And there's this huge vacuum when it comes to leadership in this country, and it starts at the local level, and it certainly works its way all the way to the White House. When you have the meltdown that took place over the last 10 days was predicted. I mean, but no one in leadership from Congress to the White House, all they could do was take partisan positions and stances and shoot at each other, probably a bad reference, but, I mean, take shots at each other instead of saying, all right, this is where we must come together, because people want to hold us accountable for the state of their economy, for how much they pay for their gas, for their mortgage on their home, the education of their children, from how much their groceries cost. These are bottom baseline issues that you and I, Mark, and Dr. Jerome, we face every single day.
Right.
But yet all we can get from our so-called quote-unquote leaders is, all right, we're going to all come together for this bailout program. But even that is about positioning. Even that is about, okay, whose position, Barack Obama or John McCain, is stronger on this issue? I don't care about that. What I care about is who's going to present
right.
a solution, and who can I hold accountable when our country continues to fall apart. And then on a personal note, Mark, you know this, Ken Harris was a friend. I didn't know him as well as a lot of people know him or are claiming to know him now in his death, but he was a good friend to me. And I was chief of staff to the city council president when Ken was elected to the city council. I helped with his orientation on the city council. He was so bright, so smart. These thugs that took his life have no idea the potential that they have snuffed out, the potential for solutions in this city, in this state, in this world. And, I mean, my whole weekend was screwed up as I thought about
the
senselessness. And I know you and I talked, the senselessness behind this. And every day somebody
right.
is the victim of this kind of savagery that's taking place. But like Dr. Durham said, we have to be very careful, because even in this situation with Ken Harris, which breaks our heart, we have not seen the worst of this. When people are desperate, and I'm not making excuses for these people, but when people find themselves in desperate situations, they do dumb, stupid, and in this case, deadly things. And I'm not sure if we've seen the worst of this in our country. And unfortunately, we're going to lose more Ken Harrises. We've already lost tons of Ken Harrises before we lost Ken Harris. We need leadership. We need vision. And it's got to start in City Hall and make its way to the White House. And I'm not sure if we have it.
Eric Durham, and then we're going to go to Norman. And Trinia Smith has been holding on as a school teacher. We want to hear from her.
Yeah, Anthony had a lot of good stuff to say. I'll just say this, and this supplement on what he said. Bob Marley wrote a song, Them Belly Full.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Our belly is a full. Or their bellies are full, but we're hungry.
Yeah.
And a hungry mob is an angry mob. I'm not giving excuses to these people who took this man's life either. But what I am saying is, when your stomach is empty and you are the product of, let's say, a Baltimore City school or area in West Baltimore, or all the talking points and all the places supposed to have just poor education, you've lived through this. So then it's not, I mean, you play by a whole different code. And you live by a whole different code, which some of it is very dissimilar from what, you know, mainstream or middle America is. And then some of it is the same code, because as you see here, Bush, some of these guys, these big oil guys, were having prostitutes and drugs up here during this whole scandal. This is a couple months ago or whatever. So people have been playing with money, making up money, just doing all types of bad, corrupt things. And this is what we had.
Let me go back to the phone, Jen. I'll just say that, you know, I think you all are right. And I think, I mean, A, these thugs have to be taken off the street.
Yeah.
I mean, they cannot, they got to go somewhere else. And it can't be tolerated. Also, we can, there's enough energy in this town and other cities like this, and people know how to do it, where people who are would-be thugs who are young, and people who have become thugs themselves, can be turned around.
Amen.
People have to fight for nonviolence and peace and turn people around. People can be turned around and will turn themselves around. And I keep saying over and over again when I look at the work of Dante Wilson and others in this community that there's nothing more powerful than the thug who has turned to peace. And let me just tell you about what's happening to remember him, and then we'll go right to Norman. And Trini, I promise, coming right to you as well. On Wednesday, September 24th at 6 p.m., a community gathering is planned at New Haven Lounge, Northwest Plaza. And here's the quote, "Under the banner of Enough is Enough, we're remembering Ken Harris and his work on behalf of our community. We're expressing our determination to continue our efforts to correct the benign indifference plaguing Northwood Plaza and to restore the shopping area to a safe, vibrant, and respected part of our community." You can go to faithinactiononline.com. And on Wednesday, again, September 24th, a public viewing will take place at Huber Memorial Church, 5701 York Road, from 6 to 8 p.m. So you can come to the rally and then go to the church and pay your respects to Ken Harris's family at the viewing that will be taking place. The funeral will take place Thursday, September 25th, 2008, at Morgan State University here on campus in the Fine Arts Building located at 2201 Argon Drive. A public viewing will be held from 10 to 11 a.m. The funeral services will begin promptly at 11. You can go to WJZ.com. They're keeping a full list of remembrances. We'll put this on our website. Just Google Mark Steiner Show. Go right there, and we will, .com, and we will have them on our website as well. 410-319-8888. First, Norman and Trini, we can bring her in this conversation as well. Norman, you're on the line.
Yeah, good evening.
Hi, Norman.
I've been listening to all the discussion, which is very enlightening. I have a question to ask you. Have you ever gone to a young men's clothing store?
A what?
A young men's clothing store.
Yes.
Okay, what you see when you first walk in there are guns, the hip-hop culture of violence. They have the skull. You ever seen the skull that they have, the symbol of death?
On yes.
On the T-shirts. Have you ever seen that?
Yes.
Okay. So you know you're creating that, and then you wonder why it happens. I mean, if you have a culture of violence that is accepted, I saw the thing on Douglas High School, Hard Times at Douglas High School, where guys were fighting girls, where no one wanted to go to school. I mean, if they taught civility, I guess, in schools, where a person's relationship not only to himself but to his community would be pointed out to him, that we're all in this together, that maybe we can stop the violence. I work in the jails. I've been there 39 years. They're getting ready to build another juvenile detention center. They knocked down the old gas and electric building, and now they're going to build up another one. So we already anticipating there's going to be more violence because we're making space to lock them up. But you got to get them when they're young. You have to tell them that there's a better life. You have to stop parents letting their children walk around with T-shirts with guns on and death head skulls, you know, and then expect that the kid is going to be something different. If he sees difference, if he sees death, he's going to assume that death is okay. And you have a lot of young men who really believe that killing somebody is not bad, and it's a rite of passage, especially for a lot of gangs.
Norman, thank you so much for holding on. I think what you raise here is really important, that there's a culture of violence that can, and I think it can end. We have to start developing a culture of peace. The way we treat our children, the way we handle confrontations in schools, the way we handle many things, we can build a culture of peace and nonviolence. I firmly believe it. I know we can.
I'll just say real quick that as a hip-hop scholar, 30-year-old African-American, I do understand the power of symbols and signs, but I do not like placing too much attention, responsibility, blame on clothing, hip-hop manufacturers, lyrics, and songs, only to this degree. The degree is the socioeconomic fundamentals, which is money and attention. If you want the schools to be better, put the money into the schools. You want Northwood Plaza to be better, put the money into it. You want your neighborhoods to be better, put the money into it. Hip-hop was a cultural art form born out of marginalization, depression, and oppression.
The same people who own the financial sectors, who've driven this economy to the ground, are married to the same people who own the companies that have turned hip-hop into a violent medium as opposed to the medium where it started.
There you go.
I mean, and 80%, 90% of people who buy all the hip-hop music and the hip-hop clothing are not black children in the inner city, but are kids in the suburbs.
There you go.
And it, you know, I mean, this is something we have to remember. We're pushing a culture of violence and in this country, and it's being eaten up by the young men and some of the young women. Trini, you've been holding on forever. You're on the air.
Oh, how you doing, Mark?
Trini, I'm so sorry. How are you?
Good. First, I just want to send my heart out to the Harris family. And I kind of am really glad I came in at this point discussing sort of culture and how it shapes all the things that are happening. I mean, I run a hip-hop organization in the city that works with young people.
Hip-hop Congress, right?
Right.
Right.
Teach them the true essence of what hip-hop was and teach them about, you know, their own marginalization and how the larger system sort of is playing a part in that and what they can do as individuals and as community to get out of that. But I think the thing that scares me the most is that when things like this happen and we have to sort of look at the big picture of things and kids are dying every day the same way, like little kids are dying, older kids are dying. And we sometimes have to remember, yes, these whoever the perpetrators of this need to be held accountable. But when you speak of, Mark, you said thugs, and I thought to myself, well, you know, a lot of these economic companies are the true thugs, and they're, you know,
amen to that,
raping people
right.
of monies and culture. I mean, even the question of, like, whose culture are they selling on the racks? You know, that's not the culture that people of color, especially in urban cities, began with. That was given to them as a byproduct of being forced into a socioeconomic position and class position in America. And so, I guess, you know, some of the people are like, you know, people got to create programs and everything. Those programs are out there. You know, people are out there doing the work, but we got to use our constituencies, the people that we know can pressure these companies. We got to get politicians to understand that they work for us. And not for the people who are, you know, sliding money into their pockets.
How do we do that?
I think we have to organize politically. First, there needs to be an education in urban communities about the political system and how it works. Then we need to find folks to take over and take on roles in the community as political leaders. Not enough folks in urban environments are willing to take on sort of like the revolutionary stance of being a political leader in that space and say to people, listen, yes, a nice new hotel would be nice downtown, but that's not what our city needs, right? Like, yes, a trolley to take visitors around would be nice, but that's not what our city needs. And in a world where we choose to build more prisons instead of more schools, we're setting ourselves up for that. And if we don't start to hold people accountable, and by doing that, we need to be educated on the way in which the system does work and how we can change that, this is only going to eat everybody alive.
But, you know, Trini, let me throw out to everybody here, and I'm going to hear what other people have to say. I'm going to go to Reverend Charles Neal, who's called, and he's the next caller up. And Anthony, our resident reverend, is still with us. Aren't you still there, Anthony?
I'm still here.
You are my resident reverend. So, is that we are at a time like that right now. This is the time to have the debate with America right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because now the government's talking about this bailout. Now it's time to talk about bailing out this country. Taking care of its people. Our elected officials, our senators, Ben Cardin, Barbara Mikulski, our congressman, Elijah Cummings, Dutch Ruppersberger, all the people we send to the U.S. Congress. Now it's time to talk to them now, and I want to get them on the air with us, to say, how are you going to stand up to being railroaded by the Bush administration to another railroad job like we did with Iraq, saying, let's discuss what money comes to the community? What money is coming to us? We can bail them out for $700 billion. What's a tax trucker that's going to tax those at the very top who have created this crisis and not just people like us in the middle at the bottom? It's time for that discussion now to figure out how we're going to put money into our communities.
And I say that if we come to that conversation with a bit of leverage, we're coming that much better. Because these people understand vocabularies of power. And if you just come to them and say, hey, what you going to do, this, that, and the third, I can see us being railroaded. But, hey, if we could take something from, I don't know what it is, but you got to start thinking, I believe the healthy thing to do is figure out what you going to take or how you going to make their lives uncomfortable if you don't get what you want.
And Mark, go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say one way that folks need to realize is that the economic system in which keeps a lot of folks that are marginalized down is the same one that we feed. right? So part of it is a personal responsibility on folks that are buying things that they just don't need, right? And then complaining about why companies are allowed to do this. I mean, if people can understand how the system works and that what that leverage is, for instance, right? Like, a lot of folks don't know that you need leverage to talk to people that are in political spaces right now. But they also don't understand that the money in which they use on, you know, buying, you know, like even hip-hop albums, for instance, right, is a good, you know, example of that. If we don't understand that, we got to sort of decide that we are going to take control of what's happening in our communities, what's being sold, what's being bought, then we can't even start that conversation, really.
You're trying to say something, Anthony, and we'll go to Reverend Neal.
And I think everything that Dr. Durham and the young lady have said is on point. But I also think that, Martin, you said something earlier. You wrote it in your blog, and I think it cannot be underestimated, the power of teaching a culture of peace.
Right.
And that when issues arise in our communities, as the sister just said, about we have to make the decision about what is going to be the standard in our community, what is going to be acceptable. And I believe you draw a line in the sand. When you talk about $700 billion going to bail out these major, massive corporations and their CEOs, no one said for a moment, stop, hold up, wait a minute.
Right.
We need to draw a line here and say, okay, let's start at the bottom. If we're talking about creating a culture of peace and prioritizing life, joy, and love in our communities, and stop giving power to this so-called culture of violence, we can overcome this. And I get disappointed when I see Sarbanes and I'm not going to call names, but I get disappointed when I see leaders come out and say, we're tackling this, we're jumping right on this, we're all lining up behind the president for the $700 billion bailout, and no one stops to say, as you just asked, Mark, wait a minute, what's going to happen in my community? How are we going to address this instead of in the boardroom at Wall Street? How are you addressing this in the school in my neighborhood, in that little small business in my neighborhood? And when people are hungry, bellies are empty in our neighborhoods, yeah, I can't identify with Wall Street other than it impacts my 401k.
Exactly.
No, this is the time to do it. I mean, this is all major economic figures in this country right now are saying, put the brakes on.
Yeah.
Let's force the issue. Where's the money going to come from? Who's going to get taxed? How are we going to regulate the industry? Demand that this does not give multi-million-dollar parachutes to those who run these companies. You can't. I mean, and what they want is a blank check, and we can't have a blank check. We have to be able to write the checks ourselves. 410-319-8888. Reverend Charles Neal. Reverend Charles Neal, you're on the air.
Sure. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks for calling.
I commend you. I mean, just for taking this hour to remember a great warrior.
Yep.
The city of Baltimore, Ken Harris, was a warrior. Not only was he a warrior, but he was a family man, and we all know that. Anthony had mentioned something earlier in the conversation concerning those who are claiming to have known Mr. Harris, you know, in the time of his death. I can truly say that he is a friend. Well, he was a friend. And because he had played a great part in my life as well as my family's life, he will always be remembered. And just as I indicated on Channel 13 on yesterday, if I could and would, if I could just take a black scarf and hang it across the city of Baltimore to remember a fallen soldier who had, you know, I mean, someone who has fought very hard to bring this city to peace, it just saddens me greatly. Along with the rest of the residents of the city of Baltimore, as well as you all, I'm one of the preachers who I don't just stand behind the pulpit, Mark, but I like to take it to the streets. You know, I'm not one of those who just preach a Sunday sermon and just say, hey, you know, pass the collection plate. But I'm one of those ones who believe in going out into the communities and organizing and speaking out against injustice, not just against the government, not just against those politicians who say that they're going to do something and then turn around and don't do it, but to those perpetrators in the city of Baltimore who are bringing havoc upon the city of Baltimore, a wonderful city in which I am proud to be a part of. And I thank people like Ken Harris and others who are making that sacrifice to make this city a great place for us to live. He has, I mean, his legacy will forever live. And I tell you, he has played a great part in my life as well as my family's life. And I'm grateful to that.
I'm so glad you called and joined us, Reverend Neal. It's been a pleasure to hear your voice on the air.
Yes, sir.
Remembering Ken, and Ken Harris was one of those. Ken Harris did care. I mean, he when I interviewed him over and over again, I mean, his care was about the children of the city, about creating programs to make sure kids were saved. that he knew he came up from the same place. And he wanted more than that. He wanted kids also to, he wanted to have programs out there and working with young people to let them understand they can do it. They can turn their lives around. They can become what they want to become and not be sucked into the street culture and not be destroyed by it. And so in the wake of his death, I think it's, we have to steel ourselves to say, no, no more children should die in the city. No more people should be murdered in the city. We have to stand up. Teach a culture of nonviolence and peace, mm-hmm. and not the culture of violence that's permeating this town.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have about a minute left, maybe a little bit less. That's it. We have no time at all, you're saying. So let me read the credits real fast. And thank you, Eric Durham and Anthony McCarthy for being part of the show today.
Thank you, Mark.
The Mark Steiner Show is produced by Jessica Phillips and Justin Levy, directly engineered by Zach Coleman, intern producer Judith Lloyd. Go to MarkSteinerShow.com to podcast this and other shows. And for Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. Remember Ken Harris. See you Wednesday night to remember him at Northwood Shopping Center at 6 p.m.